Well, good morning, everybody. This is Lenny Lawson, your friend in the car business. I stole that from somebody else. And your car guru, if you choose to use me. If you're listening to the radio station and you can't change stations, then you're stuck with me for the next 26 minutes. But if not, and if you're here by choice, I thank you for your attention. I'm going to change things up a little bit for my format for my show, since before I never really had one for 18 years. But I've got some situations that we need to talk about on a more consistent basis. Car buying, car trading, servicing, even car renting, car repairing, body shop stuff. You know, there's so many different things that can impact your life as a car owner. And things that can cost you a lot of money when you don't know what you're doing or not sure about what you're doing. You know, isn't it funny how reluctant people are to ask for advice, to ask for help? Another thing that people are really reluctant to do is to complain. I always tell my customers, you know, if you've got some kind of a suggestion or something that I'm doing that you think I can do better, I want to hear about it. We had a situation where we have a scheduling issue at Gateway. We're having to put off too many people's regular maintenance stuff, and my service manager, who's been with me with the organization for 30 plus years, said that we needed more lifts and more techs. And I'm thinking, okay, well, what's another way to look at this? And so we are open on after 5 o'clock till about 7 o'clock we're open till 7 on weekdays and on Saturdays for service until noon. And we're not real busy after hours and on Saturdays. And I said, okay, I don't think we have a capacity problem. I think we have a scheduling problem. And I've talked to several other customers about that, and they say, yeah, you know, you really shouldn't have to wait a week to get your oil change, and I agree 100%. I was in Johnson City, went to my favorite store, Mahoney's in Johnson City, and then I was coming around there towards State of Franklin, and I saw the Pals, and I looked at my wife, I said, you want tea? And she'll never say no to, do you want a tea? It's always, absolutely. So we turned into Pals, and got our tea. You know, there's few organizations that run as well as that organization does. And so we got our Pals tea. But as I'm in line for the Pals tea, I look over to my right and there's an oil change place. And there's a line of people. I think they have two lanes. I think it's a Valvoline oil change quick lube place. And there's people waiting in line. Just like I was waiting in line at Pals, they're waiting in line to get their oil change. Now, that's something that I would never want to do. But I understand why people do it, because it's convenient. And, you know, you think about regular maintenance, you think about getting an oil change, and you don't want to have to think about it for a week or two. You just want to do it. So you pull behind a line at the Valvoline place or wherever they do quick oil changes. So anyway, we look at our capacity situation and say, you know, there's a better way to do this. And I think any business that wants to stay in business has to always look for the better way, right? I mean, yeah, I was going to talk about this new fast food restaurant that opened in Greenville. I think it's called Smashies. It's a weird name for a restaurant. I don't know if it's a chain or whatever. But anyway, they always have a huge line in front of the place that never moves. I mean, I've come by 10 minutes later, the same cars are in the drive. They're not like Pals. They're not efficient. And that'll go on for so long, won't it? I mean, if the food is phenomenal, that's great. But there's more than just quality that makes people, you know, want to come back to you or want to use your business. The food can be super, but if the service is lousy, you'll defect. You know, if our oil changes and what we do, they like our people and stuff like that, but if they don't like waiting, you know, for an oil change, then they'll defect. So we have to find those defection points. You know, in some dealerships, it's before you even get to stage one. You know, you drive onto a car dealer's lot and you see 15 salespeople glaring at you. you know, waiting for you to get out of your car. You know, that's, to me, is uncomfortable. I wouldn't like that if I was a consumer. Yet, occasionally, I will drive onto my lot and I will see a group of salespeople standing together chit-chatting, probably doing, saying nothing good, you know, talking about politics or sports or whatever, nothing to do with the car business. So there's certain things that we do. Leaving customers on hold too long. You know, not getting their tags to them quick enough when they trade. Not following up to get their bedliner that they ordered or their running boards or whatever after the sale. Failing to keep people updated, you know, on the status of their repairs. I found that to be one of the number one things that you can do in a business to improve your business is to just follow up with people. Just give them an update, for goodness sake. You know, if somebody's car is in the shop and it's been there for a day or two, or you think it's going to be longer, just call them once a day and just give them a friendly update. That's not hard to do, but too many dealers don't do it, and occasionally I'll catch our people not doing it. And, you know, it's something that it is such a busy place. A service department is busy, and the difference in the car business that everybody wants something different that drives in the door. You know, there's a lot of people that just want an oil change, but pretty much everybody has a different need or a different problem. And, of course, as a technician, you never know what the dispatcher is going to hand you. I was talking to a service tech today, and he says that my number one frustration is not knowing what's going to hit me during the day. It is the randomness of it. It's hard for me to say. It's a random thing because you don't know what's coming in the door. He said if they could just even that up a little bit with scheduling, that would make my life easier. And I said, well, let me see what I can do about that. So hopefully we'll be able to fix that for him. But, you know, this is one of the challenges, one of the many challenges in the car business is the just the complexity of it, the dependency on automobiles in general that people have. They get frustrated when they have to be without their car. You know, I've heard some service advisors in the past say, well, I gave them a loaner car, but that's not theirs. That's not their car. You know, they like being close to their own stuff. You know, they don't like driving somebody else's car. It's different, and I get that. So anyway, we all need to work harder with those types of things, and I'm sure if there's anybody listening who owns a car dealership, they understand exactly what I'm talking about. If they work at a dealership, they need to. So anyway, we'll be back in just a minute. But stopping your vehicle in as short a distance as possible, there's nothing boring about that. I was watching a video on YouTube the other day about driving mishaps and things that happen. And, I mean, it just made me not want to get behind the wheel of a car ever again. The number of people that run traffic lights. You know, if you're teaching a young driver, and maybe you've forgotten this, but just because the light turns green doesn't mean you should go. I think we all get frustrated by that person that's in front of us that says, come on, man, it's green, it's green. And they just won't move out. If they're busy looking at their cell phone or, you know, changing the radio station, I get it. But maybe they're looking left and looking right and looking left again before they pull out to an intersection. Because, folks, as distracted as people are today, I don't trust a traffic light. People run red lights. I see it all the time. And on this video, it was shocking, you know, to see the horrendous accidents that happen because people ignore the traffic light. They don't see the red, or they try to race the yellow. And then you got the hot shot that just can't wait to take off as soon as it turns green. They think they're at a drag strip, you know, Thunder Valley. They're not at Thunder Valley, but they drive like they are. Can't wait to hit the gas pedal when that thing turns green, and next thing you know, they're getting broadsided by somebody who's trying to beat the red light. But anyway, brakes are important. There are, you know, the history of brakes go back to the old wagons, you know, where you were driving an old horse and buggy wagon, and you just pull this big lever, and it would mash against the rotating wheel and slow it down or stop it altogether. And that's the way the initial car brakes were. And then somebody invented what we still use today are drum brakes, which are an inefficient brake, but still better than they were back in the old days. But you will never see drum brakes on the front of a modern car. They'll always be on the rear. Obviously, they're cheaper to make for some doggone reason. I have no idea. But disc brakes are the brakes of choice. And, you know, when you have disc brakes on the front, disc brakes on the rear, you have pretty much the latest and the best kind of brakes you can get. Now, there are all kinds of higher quality brakes that you can get for your car that, and when I say higher quality, I'm talking about have more stopping power and are less prone to fade. You know what fade is? It's when, you know, you use your brakes repeatedly and then all of a sudden they don't stop as well as they were earlier. And the fluid gets hot inside brakes and, you know, the pads and rotors themselves get hot, which causes the brakes not to stop the vehicle as well as they should, as well as they would if the brakes were cool or warm, just slightly warm. So anyway, I was looking at some older vehicles this past week, and both of them were made in the 60s. And I look at the master cylinder on the firewall, which is where the fluid is. And when you mash on your brakes, or press on your brakes, maybe I should say, mash is a good old East Tennessee term. When you mash on your brakes, it pushes a plunger into the master cylinder, which in turn pushes fluid down the brake line, which goes all the way to your brakes, whether they're in the front or the back, and causes the vehicle to stop, supposedly. Now, back then in the mid-60s, there was just one brake line that came out, and basically you had one source of pressure that was going to all the four wheels. Well, that's not that way anymore. They invented, somebody said, well, let's send pressure through separate lines to each of the brakes just in case, you know, if one goes out, they all don't go out. Well, that was a brilliant idea. And so today we have what we call four-channel brake lines. And then they came out with something called anti-lock brakes, which created all kinds of new possibilities. Anti-lock brakes, we all know that if your brakes lock up, then you lose steering control. And the car actually will slide further with locked up brakes than it will if you were able to modulate the pressure on the brakes. So anyway, they developed four-channel ABS brakes, which means that they can lock each wheel or basically stop each wheel separately. Well, what did that do? Well, it enabled you to maintain control of your car. Anti-lock brakes, when I remember my first experience, I went to a BMW dealership. I was visiting my brother-in-law in South Carolina, and we were getting bored, so we went on a man trip. And that involves either looking at stereo equipment or cars. So we don't go to the mall and, you know, look at the latest fashions on a man trip. You go to the dealerships and test drive stuff. So we test drove a brand new Audi that had just come out with anti-lock brakes. So the salesperson took us on a test drive. We're going down this road and he gets over on the gravel. He puts one set of tires on the gravel on the berm of the road and the other set on the road itself, and then took his hands off the steering wheel and slammed on the brakes, and the car stopped straight. He says that's what anti-lock brakes do for you. Because if he had done that with regular brakes, the car would have probably spun around, crashed. So anyway, that's the way they treated their demonstrators at this dealership in Spartanburg or Greenville, South Carolina. But I did learn about anti-lock brakes in that very vivid demonstration. I always told my kids, I said, if you want to understand brakes, we need to go to a big parking lot when there's snow on the ground. And hopefully the police won't watch us do this, but really just slam on the brakes and see what the car does when anti-lock brakes kick in, because it is a weird kind of a feeling that you get a little feedback through the pedal, and that. But basically, what's happening is the brakes are being applied and unapplied so fast that or faster than is humanly possible to keep them from locking up. So that's what anti-lock brakes mean. So what that allowed them to do when they developed that was to develop something called stability control. So let's say you're going down a road and you go off of the berm of the road and you overcorrect, which is what most people do. They jerk the steering wheel back onto the road and then they end up spinning out. I have a young daughter that happened to, and she totaled a Volkswagen Jetta because of that very reaction. If the car that she was driving had had stability control, then basically she could have just kept the steering wheel straight, slammed on the brakes, and the car would have applied the braking pressure where it had traction, because it has four different channels, one for each wheel, and it would be able to adjust the brake pressure to the wheel that it needs to in order to control keep the car from going into a spin. They have these things called yaw controls, YAW, that is constantly measuring, okay, where is this car moving? Is it getting off center based on the way the wheels are traveling? It is a measurement of angle. It's very complicated, and I won't get into it because I barely understand it myself. But anyway, it's a physics thing, and you don't want your car going sideways down a straight road. That's not a good thing. And so when that happens, the car automatically corrects it by applying brake pressure where it needs to. So brakes are in a very important part of your car. If your brake pads get below where they should be, there are little rivets, little metal rivets that hold the brake pad material to the backing plate of the pad. And when your brake, you ever hear that squealing noise when you apply, just barely apply your brakes, or just even when you're just driving around slow, you hear kind of like that? Well, that's your brake pad wear indicators that are little metal things that stick out and touch your brake rotor. And that is an indication that, to you, an audible indication that your brakes are worn out. Now, if you keep going, what you're going to do is you're going to get down to the rivets that hold that brake material on there, and that is going to destroy your brake rotor, which is expensive. Now, aftermarket rotors have really come down in price, but I'm not going aftermarket on anything to do with my brakes. I'm sorry. Factory brake pads, factory rotors. They aren't that much more expensive, and of course the people at Advance Auto Parts and O'Reilly's and stuff, they'll say, well, they're made in the same factory. Well, maybe they are, but maybe they're made in a factory in China. And I want my brake pads made in America. That's just how I feel about it. But anyway, different types of pads are going to perform differently as well. I had a Porsche one time that every time I stopped, it sounded like a log truck was stopping beside me, and I was just so embarrassed. I never could get it fixed. They tried all these different types of brake pads, and nothing would work. But when they put factory brake pads on there, it stopped squeaking or squealing. It wasn't a squeak, it was a squeal. You ever apply your brakes and it pulls one direction or another? A lot of people think that could be an alignment situation. It could be a braking situation also. And you don't want that to carry on. Also, the shuddering that you feel sometimes when you apply your brakes. Now, not like a panic stop shuddering like you get with analog brakes, but just a pulsation. You know, you put your foot on the brake pedal and it just pulsates back and forth. What it is, that means is that your rotors have gotten out around. Now, sometimes the rotors can be turned on a brake lathe. You take them off, or they have on-car brake lathes too. But you pull them off, you true them up. If they're not worn down too far, that's a much cheaper alternative to replacing the rotors in general. What else do I want to say about brakes? You know, as far as I've already talked about the fact, you know, using factory pads and stuff like that. This is not an area that you want to shortchange. Every time you get your oil change, if you go to a Jiffy Lube place or someplace, I don't mean to say Jiffy Lube, but, you know, you don't know, they're not raising your car up on a lift, and they're not really looking at the condition of your brakes. Some of them do, but I want to make sure that they're looking at a lot more than just that. I want a multi-point inspection done on my vehicle. I want them to look at my exhaust system, my belts, hoses, and all that stuff too. And if you're, you know, the quick place is quick, but that's about it. So we'll take our last break and be back here in just a minute. Did you know that your seat belts are a part of your ABS braking system? You know, it's a fact, and your airbags are also on the team as well. If you have an airbag light come on, or sometimes a brake light come on, it'll indicate that the seat belt tensioners, automatic seat belt tensioners in your car have gone bad. It may not be your ABS system. It may not be your airbag system. It may just be your seat belts. So sometimes, you need to take it into a dealership that has the equipment to test that, or you know, there are some service centers out there that are run by people who are factory-trained technicians at a new car store. That's where they got their knowledge. That's typically where your bigger-time shops come from, or shop owners and shop mechanics. They came from new car dealerships, and they just decided to go out on their own. And they know a lot. They have a lot of information. So, you know, I can think of several in Greenville that are great places to get your car service. But if you have a warranty issue or a real complicated issue, many times even those shops are going to send you where? To see me at Gateway Ford. So anyway, if you have any issues about brakes or you have concerns about mechanical issues that you need answers to, feel free to call me. My cell phone number is 423-552-2020. And that's it for today, and we'll see you tomorrow bright and early, 9:05. That's when we start. My Car Guru. See you later.